Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What is demanded then is a return to these troops. What is required of us now is a new era of responsibility, a recognition on the part of every American that we have duties to ourselves, our nation, and the world, duties that we do not grudgingly accept, but rather seize gladly, firm in the knowledge that there is nothing so satisfying to the spirit, so defining of our character, than giving our all to a difficult task.
But did you know that he wants to tweak your brain so that you do the right thing? Time magazine reports that President Obama has a secret cabinet known as the Consortium of Behavioral Scientists, 29 experts in personal change, planning economic, education, energy, healthcare policies that depend on you and me doing things differently in our own lives. Time magazine national correspondent Michael Grunwald wrote the story and joins us now. Hi, Michael. Thanks for coming on WNYC.
Hey, how you doing?
There's really this entity called the Consortium of Behavioral Scientists?
Yeah, it was a group that was sort of secretly advising him during the campaign. A lot of these guys had tried to get to John Kerry in 2004 with very little success, but they started sending white papers to Obama, and it really ended up the Obama campaign team really jumped on some of their recommendations. They changed their get out the vote strategies, those fundraising lotteries where you could kind of win some FaceTime with Obama. That came from behavioral science. So they did take it seriously then, and now they're really taking behavioral science seriously as they start crafting policies to change the way we go about our lives.
Why was it a secret consortium?
Well, I think I think some of these guys are academics and didn't really want to be in the publicly declared one way or another. And I think this was just sort of behind the scenes campaign stuff where they were using public science for kind of private means, and I guess they didn't want everybody knowing about it.
And was it secret with respect to public policy since the inauguration too?
Well, I think some things are quite public. One of those 29 members, Cass Sunstein, has been nominated to be President Obama's regulatory czar. And I think it's no secret at all that a lot of people in the Obama administration have some real strong ties to particularly behavioral economics. Peter Orszag, the budget director, is kind of a behavioral economics nut. He's really obsessed with this stuff. His deputy, Jeff Liebman, is a behavioral economist. Austin Goolsbee, who is a White House economist who you see on Meet the Press all the time, he has a behavioral background. Even Larry Summers had done some behavioral finance work back in the day. So, and then especially with Sunstein, who's going to be really in charge of all regulation for the administration, this is something they're going to be looking at when they're trying to get us to use less energy and live healthier lives and, spend more money now and then save more money in the future. They're looking at these, the science and the research on how to get people to change.
And one of the Sunstein examples that you give in the book was really fascinating to me. Given the article, he wrote a book called Nudge, along with someone named Thaler, which had suggestions for how people applying for mortgages could have better understood what they were getting themselves into with these subprimes. How would that have worked?
Well, that's exactly right. This is one of their real obsessions because they consider themselves libertarian paternalists, which means they kind of want people to make better choices, but they want people to still be free to make bad choices like we are today. The idea is to just sort of nudge people towards making better ones. One of the areas where they really feel there's a strong need for government action is for these very complicated choices like finding a mortgage, like a credit card, picking your health insurance, where today, we make these choices and we think we have full information, but you have 100 pages of paperwork and you can't, you don't know about those hidden fees and you don't really know what's the best plan for you. What in Nudge, they push very hard for a kind of disclosure and transparency and clarity, where there would be kind of government websites that would require you, instead of having, you know, 1,000 pages of paperwork on your mortgage and, you know, you just have to sign every one without having any idea what's in any of them, where really there would be, it would be forced not only with that there would be the terms fully disclosed and transparent, but that sort of regular people without PhDs could make sense of it.
Yeah.
And in fact, on his second day in office, President Obama did sign an executive order involving sort of transparency and technology that Richard Thaler, who's the sort of founder of behavioral economics and is very tight with his co-author, obviously, says that that's what this is about.
Thaler and Sunstein wrote Nudge together. Nudge, the title really implies that if you give people the right kind of nudge, then they're going to do the right thing for themselves and for the country. And we'll get into some more examples. But before we get off this transparency in mortgaging, it means that these behavioral science techniques aimed at individuals really have to be coordinated with good regulation, because laws that mandate transparency rather than obfuscation in describing the terms of a mortgage to a prospective home buyer seems to be the perfect example. You know, if you kind of realize the way, because we're learning that so many people didn't realize the way their mortgages were going to balloon and things like that. So I guess the White House sees government mandates and behavioral science techniques as working together.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, you know, you could just say like, hey, we're not going to allow adjustable rate mortgages. You know, we're not going to have any exotic mortgages. You know, everybody has to get a 30-year fixed loan, or maybe we won't even allow securitization of those mortgages. That's not the kind of hardcore paternalism that the Obama administration seems to be coming from. It's more an idea of, well, we have these problems, and we'd like people to be free to make choices, but right now they're just making such bad ones. How can we help them make better ones? And, you know, there's certainly some people find something creepy about it. And you know, there's been one of the talking points that Republicans have pushed against Obama is this idea that he's kind of a nanny state elitist who's going to tell you to, you know, read to your kids and inflate your tires and, you know, choose hope over fear and all those other good, fine things when maybe we just want to sit around and be couch potatoes. The flip side, though, is that when you look at the problems that he's talking about, you know, right now our carbon emissions are boiling the planet, and our healthcare costs are bankrupting the treasury, and our savings rate is really imperiling our financial future. We really do need to change, is the sort of counter argument.
It's pretty funny
if we can do it without these sort of heavy-handed mandates, so much the better.
It would be pretty funny if there are conservatives scolding Obama for admonishing people to read to their kids, because I thought the conservative position was that kids fail in school because of bad parenting, not because of bad public schools. But
yeah,
that's a discussion for another segment. But there are people who find it creepy, like a listener named Gabrielle in Brooklyn, who just posted this on our website. When was applied behavioral psychology first introduced into White House politics? Is there a dark history attributed to its use in America? For example, German state propaganda used by the Nazi regime is associated with this.
Well, you know, it's funny. When Time magazine put B.F. Skinner on its cover, you know, a few decades ago, there was a lot of kind of people were sort of freaking out who's controlling the controllers. And I think certainly there was some attacks on Jimmy Carter in his, when he was putting on a sweater and telling people to turn up their thermostats, that, you know, he was sort of interfering with the great American way of life. You know, I sort of suggest in this piece that there, you know, particularly because of the emphasis on the kind of libertarian side of paternalism, that, you know, that we're going to try to nudge you to do the right thing rather than force you to do the right thing, that there's certainly, you know, the outcry, while I'm sure it will be there, it seems a little bit less compelling when you consider the scope of the problems
right.
we really have and the importance of changing these behaviors that really do seem to be for our own good. You know, this is really stuff that's kind of intuitive, right? I mean, we all know that, like, we all know we should live healthier lives, but, oh, you know, cupcake. That's great, you know. And we know we'd sort of we buy diet plans. You know, we spend money in ways that neoclassical economics would say is totally irrational to try to bind ourselves to do the right thing. These are kind of coming up with innovative ways to help us do the right thing. The best example, I think, being the 401k plan.
I was just going to raise it because this seems to be the granddaddy of them all, although it's only about eight years old. That's really inspired a lot of this field, especially in the White House. The 401k automatic enrollment plan. Tell us about it.
Exactly. Well, there's been studies, and in fact, this is what Orszag first got him excited about behavioral economics. They found that if you have to sign up for a 401k plan, and this is even when there's an employer match, which is essentially giving you free money, you know, which neoclassical economics would basically say, well, everybody's going to do it. It's free money. But in fact, only about a third of people do it, you know, just because, you know, who knows? People are lazy. It seems like a lot of paperwork. Well, they found that when you actually are signed up for the plan, unless you opt out, when you actually have to go through the paperwork to get out of saving for your retirement, something like 86% of people do it. And so there you've sort of solved this problem, you know, not by, you know, you can still get out, you can opt out, you know, nobody's putting a gun to your head, but instead it's just the default. It's the same thing has happened with organ donor plans. When you're an organ donor unless you say no, just about everybody signs up to be an organ donor. But if you actually have to sign up to do it, virtually nobody signs up. One interesting thing that people have pointed out is it's not just because we're lazy. It's also because people have this idea that when something is the default, there's sort of a social norm. That suggests that that's kind of like the regular thing to do, that that's what most people do. And in fact, that's sort of the killer app when it comes to behavioral science. That's what the idea of peer pressure and that everybody else is doing it. You know, that's what, in fact, with Obama's campaign team, their number one message was a record turnout is expected. In other words, don't tell people, oh, voter apathy is terrible. We really need you to vote because if you don't, we're going to lose. What you need them to say is, no, we're expecting a record turnout. Everybody's going to be voting. You're a social deviant if you don't.
Huh.
That's the message. That's the message that really works. That gets hotel guests to reuse their towels. It gets national park visitors to stay on the posted trails. It gets homeowners to use less energy. It's a very powerful message.
Everybody's
keeping up with the Joneses.
Everybody's doing it. We have a few minutes left with Time Magazine's Michael Grunwald, who wrote the story about President Obama's consortium of behavioral scientists, 29 experts in personal change, planning economic, education, and healthcare policies, and others that depend on you and me doing things differently in our lives and how they're getting us to do that. Another example that just took effect in the last week, this middle-class tax cut that people have as of April 1st, and probably a lot of people don't realize it because this is different from President Bush's checks in the mail. Explain the theory here.
Well, exactly. You know, last time they did a stimulus bill with a tax cut, there was a big rebate, and you got a big check in the mail saying, you know, congratulations, here's your tax cut. The problem, and there's a lot of behavioral finance work on this, is that when you get a big chunk in the mail, it feels like a windfall. It feels like wealth, and people are more likely to save it. What Obama has done instead is you're just going to decrease the withholding on your weekly or biweekly paychecks a little bit, so you'll get a little bit more money spread out over a little bit of time, and you're not inclined to notice it as much. That feels more like income than wealth, and people are more likely to spend it. So again, it's sort of, you know, better. It should be better stimulus. You know, you don't get the political punch of being able to say, hey, I just sent you a big check. They're actually, in fact, one of the aides I talked to said they really literally that they are trying to manipulate people into spending the money by just sort of sticking it into their paycheck rather than having a big, you know, show that we're sending you a big check.
One more example from the President's Consortium of Behavioral Scientists, smart meters to monitor electricity use in our homes. How do they work?
Well, exactly. I mean, in some ways, you could even say that's a lot like the idea of having a website that makes your mortgage clear to you. The big killer app of smart meters is that they let you know how much energy you're using. You know, they can let you know how much energy that particular appliance is using or that particular room. They can give you more control over, you know, when you're not in the house, you can turn off that particular room. The idea is by providing more information and feedback that people are going to make better choices. But again, with energy, they've really found that the most important thing is to give this idea that, you know, the social norms again. In fact, you know, there are some utilities have started sending out bills that tell you how much energy you're using compared to your neighbors. Weatherization, which is a big part of Obama's stimulus plan, you know, he's going to be spending billions of dollars to try to weatherize millions of homes. They tried that in Oregon, and at first, even though the government was paying for it, hardly anybody wanted to weatherize their home. They continued to go on heating and air conditioning the outdoors, which you'd think would be economically irrational.
Really. And later in the show, we're just about out of time, but later in the show, we'll be talking more about another of these things that you mentioned briefly in your piece. The Obama stimulus bill, spending $1 billion on something called comparative effectiveness research for healthcare. And that's taking flack from people as setting the stage for government rationing of healthcare. So that opens up a whole other $1 billion can of worms in this area. But we're going to leave this piece of the conversation here for now, and we'll talk about that one separately in about an hour. Michael Grunwald wrote this really interesting article for Time Magazine. About President Obama's consortium of behavioral scientists. The bottom line, old think is that policy can change, but people can't. Obama is saying when it comes to behavior, yes, we can. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So why do we rational human beings still believe so much in the irrational? We'll tackle that question in a minute.